Welcome back to On the Same Page. I'm your host, Emma Kirsting. On the Same Page is an Ithacan podcast where we go into the top stories in news, sports, and life and culture. This week, we have senior reporter Jaden Davis on food insecurity at Ithaca College, then Jacob Infault for the sports section on the Bombers wrestling team's journey to nationals, and lastly, Sarah Mooney on the Women's Leadership Series at Ithaca College. Here with me now, I have a senior reporter, Jaden Davis. Jaden has written for news, sports, and life and culture at the Ithacan, and he is currently not even on campus this semester. So, Jaden, welcome back to On the Same Page, and please introduce yourself. Where are you this semester, and what's this story that you've reported on?
Yeah, so my name is Jaden Davis, as Emma introduced me. I'm a senior journalism major, and I'm currently studying in Los Angeles as part of the ICLA program. So not even on campus, but still writing. So yeah, and the story that I wrote is just looking at different ways food insecurity is being addressed in Ithaca and across New York State. So looking at, different food pantries, digital agriculture, which I'll go into a little bit more, and then different initiatives that are being used to kind of improve food security.
Great. Yeah. So like you said, let's get right into it. For this story, who did you speak to gather that information? If you were doing about the campus, but also New York State, who were your sources?
I spoke to a ton of people, just kind of as you usually would go with this kind of story. So in terms of Ithaca College, I spoke to Karen Walls, who's the Executive Assistant of Student Affairs and Campus Life, and also the Primary Coordinator of Poontree's Pantry at Ithaca College. I spoke to Cheryl Balinski, Agriculture Economic Development Specialist at Cornell University. I also spoke to Hillary Klenner Davis, Co-Director of Taste of the Finger Lakes. And then I also spoke to Sean McKean, Farm-to-School Program Coordinator at Tompkins Seneca Tayuga BOCES. So just kind of a different list of sources, and they all kind of spoke about different things. Obviously, kind of the main thing was just like food insecurity, but also the 30% initiative and farm to school as well. We do mention digital agriculture, but I unfortunately couldn't get somebody for that. But I was able to look at CALS, which stands for the Cornell University's College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, as well as the Cornell Institute for Digital Agriculture. So basically went on their website, got a little bit of information, and also saw an interview from Diane Bailey, the professor of communications at Cornell University and the director of CIDA. So, you know, I was able to kind of go and do a lot of research, look at different sources. But in terms of those interviews, those were kind of the main people that I spoke to, which were the four. And then I got the interview from Diane Bailey. So
yeah, awesome. That sounds great. Sounds like a very, you know, a story they had to really get involved in, do some digging for, which is always a very exciting task. So what does food insecurity mean on like a college campus?
Yeah, so one of the main things is just, you know, students not having access to food. Obviously, with the meal plan, it can be a little expensive, and also just not knowing where to necessarily find food. So Karen Walls and I were talking about how a lot of people didn't even know that there was a food pantry on campus, myself included. And there's so many things that you can get from the pantry, from fresh fruits to, you know, stuff that's that can last for a long time. So you can get all kinds of things, you can make all kinds of recipes with the food. But the main thing is that people just weren't aware at the time. She did say that there has been a steady incline since, so more and more students are going to the food pantry and getting stuff. It's also open to members of the community. And I know that one thing that came to mind also was the daycare at IC, or kind of the daycare program. And I think that parents also can pick up some food if they need for their child, and also do stuff like that. So I think that, like, I was thinking about that as well when we were talking, but it's just the main thing was just like lack of awareness of the fact that there is a food pantry and that this food is free. Like, you don't have to obviously pay for it. You can make all kinds of food with it. And of course, you're saving time and money. So
awesome. That's great. And personally, I knew about the food pantry because I have some friends who have volunteered at it over the years. Yeah. And so I've heard great things. And one of them being, like, at Ithaca College, I think there's, like, some stuff other than food that you can get from the pantry. Like, they have, like, deodorant and, like wellness items. Yes.
Hand sanitizer. So you just get all that stuff, you know, and not have to worry about, you know, driving to Walmart, for example, because nobody has a car. And, like, that does take time if you're taking the TCAT or walking or Ubering. So it just helps with, yeah, like, time and also just with money as well, because you're saving money. You're not actually going out and buying those products, so.
Absolutely, because, like, the TCAT is free for students again this semester, but, like, at the same time, needing to go to a store and buy these things. Some of these things, maybe you just need one mask and you don't really have, like, the expense to buy, like, a, I don't know, 30-pack that they sell at Walmart. And some people might be listening and being like, well, those are very expensive. And, like, it doesn't really have to be something super expensive for someone to not really have the means to spend that money. So, yeah. And I think, yeah, that's really important. Like, the food pantry is available to, like, any student. And they're not, like, when you walk in, they're not, like, show us your meal pass. How many, yeah, swipes do you, like, they're not, like, checking you before you come in or anything. And I think that's really beneficial to students, that anyone can utilize the food pantry. Because I've heard people say that, like, even if it's just that, like, maybe you got out of a class or practice after the dining hall's closed, and so you weren't able to grab dinner that night, then you can go to the food pantry before they close and grab a little something to have that night. And I think that's really important, too, because, I mean, I think it also just goes into, like, nutrition, which I'm sure you could probably speak more on. Yeah, I mean, I think the food pantry is great.
Yeah, you mentioned, like, you know, again, people, in a way, are, I wouldn't say embarrassed, but just, like, they're a little hesitant to go because it's, like, the stigma, which, you know, Karen and I were also talking about. It's, like, you know, you definitely can go and get, you know, food. It's nothing that you should be kind of, in a way, quote-unquote, embarrassed about. It's something that you should just utilize because it's a resource at the college. It's really accessible to get to, easily accessible. Yeah, I think, especially with, like, athletes that come out late, you know, you can go to the food pantry, or obviously, you know, once you have that stuff, you can just kind of meal prep, you know, back in your dorm or apartment. So it's a very useful resource. So again, like you said, people should just be able to go and, yeah, not be concerned.
Yeah, totally. And you mentioned this earlier, this concept of digital agriculture. So I'm curious, could you describe briefly what is that and how does that play into food insecurity?
Absolutely. So digital agriculture is the use of technology, engineering, and science to figure out ways to increase food production. It really, in a way, helps out farmers who are obviously growing these crops, and it, you know, they're able to collect data by using technology, and this can improve their harvest. So some examples include, you know, collecting data using drones, which, you know, I'm someone that's, like, a big fan of drones. I'm like, that is so cool. And you can actually look, you know, for example, I mentioned CIDA and, of course, Cornell Cows. They just have photos of, like, all the ways they're using, in a way, just, like, digital agriculture, whether it's using drones or smart irrigation. There's also one thing in terms of farm animals, they're doing something called livestock management, which pretty much is using technology to prevent things like disease outbreaks and just kind of monitor their livestock. So really kind of mixing in technology and agriculture, because, like, I feel like those two were kind of separate for the longest time. Well, obviously we have things like tractors and stuff like that, but it's, like, really kind of mixing those two together, because honestly, machines are doing so much these days, and a lot of people have, like, their thoughts of, like, you know, they're going to take over the world. But it's, like, it's actually helping, because you can really use this technology to really just, like, again, improve, you know, food security and, you know, not just Ithaca, but just around the world as well. So,
yeah, thank you for explaining that. That sounds like a really interesting way of, like, you know, going as far back into, like, food production to address food insecurity, as opposed to just, like, how, once food is being made, how it's being dispersed or how it's, like, you know, being sold. So thank you for explaining that. Leaning more into, like, you're not actually on campus this semester, you have written multiple articles for News and Life and Culture this semester while being on our LA campus. So I'm curious if you could, like, speak on how that experience has been. I know, like, a few students have studied abroad in the past and, like, dabbled in an article or two, and then they're like, that's a lot. But I feel like you've been, like, really consistently working on the Ithacan while you're away, so please.
Yeah, so last semester I wasn't able to kind of write as much just because I was busy with a lot of different things. But, you know, I really wanted to kind of finish off my time at Ithaca by writing just a few more stories just because I didn't get a chance to do that last semester. And it's been a lot of fun. It's definitely work because I'm working with, obviously, a time difference, right? You know, being on the West Coast, but about 3 hours behind from the East Coast. So, you know, it'll be kind of like 9 o'clock, you know, in Los Angeles. And, like, it's like 12 a.m. in Ithaca. And I'm, like, slacking, like, Vivian, who, by the way, really has, like, helped me out this story, like, so much. Like, she's been such a help. So, shout out to Vivian. Vivian Rose, assistant news editor of The Ithacan. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of work. But I think I enjoy it. I still, you know, I always tell people that I interview, like, hey, like, I'm not in Ithaca this semester, like, I'm actually in Los Angeles, so, like, I'll just tell me your time, and, like, by now, I just know, again, it's, like, a 3 hour difference, so I'm just, like, okay, like, let me just subtract that and make sure that I'm able to, like, get things done. But yeah, I mainly do articles, but I also do reviews as well for Life and Culture. So just, one that I recently did was Kung Fu Panda 4, which was so much fun. It was also my first time doing a movie review. I usually do music because it's just easier. You just kind of listen to it and review the album. But it was nice actually going to a theater, especially the theaters in Los Angeles, and, like, you know, watching. I think I went to the one near Universal AMC, and that was, like, they had the reclining chairs. You could sit back, and they had, like, just, like, it was just a great experience. I'm just like, wow, like, this is what it's like going to the movie theaters, you know? Like, it's just very, very fun, so.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That's kind of all the questions I had for you today. Thanks so much for joining us. And to wrap things up, is there anything else about this story that you want to share, or I don't know, anything about LA that you want to share before you go?
In terms of the story, yeah, I mean, it was a really, in terms of putting it together, it was a bit of a challenge, not only with, like, just, you know, being in Los Angeles, but just kind of making sure that, you know, I was able to explain everything. I really liked kind of talking to different members of the community. So again, I spoke to Karen Walls, that's in Ithaca, but I also spoke to other sources, and it was just really just great to put together. And I'm glad that, you know, it's out there, people are able to really see what members of the community are doing to address food insecurity in Ithaca, but also the New York State. I want to give a shout out to Sean McKean, which I talked about earlier, Farm to School Program Coordinator at Tompkins Seneca BOCES. He had mentioned that, like, again, it's so important for, you know, especially children, because it's a school, to have access to healthy meals, to learn how to make food at a young age, because it really can help them later on in life. Christina Nunez as well, who is the founder director at the Learning Farm, she was able to, you know, tell me all about how she educates students and families about healthy food and really make sure that they're able to learn about the different ways they can, you know, really use fresh products to make really nutritious and healthy meals. So that was something that I really enjoyed. And then in terms of my time in LA, yeah, it's been fantastic experience. I've gone to a few tapings of different shows, Price is Right and the Jennifer Hudson show. So a lot of fun, and I really do encourage people, you know, to if they can study abroad or even just go to Los Angeles to visit. It's just so much fun. So I know you studied abroad as well, so you can speak to this too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's, like, really cool programs in through Ithaca College alone that, I mean, you should at least look into if you're thinking about studying abroad, because it's a lot of fun and very educational. Yeah, so thanks so much again, Jaden, for joining us. It's been great to see you. We're meeting over Zoom to our listeners. And to our listeners, you can check out Jaden's article at theithacan.org.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Bye.
Here with me now is Jacob Infald, one of our sports reporters, and he wrote an article about the Bombers wrestling season. Jacob, welcome back to On the Same Page. Please tell us what this article was about.
Thanks, Emma. Thanks for having me on the podcast again. So yeah, the Bombers competed at the Division III National Championships this past weekend, and they sent five competitors down, and I spoke to four of them, and including Isaias Torres, who was the sole All-American for the Bombers. He took seventh place.
Cool, that sounds great. And Yeah, going into that, you spoke to some of the athletes on the team, and did you speak to any coaches or anyone from the athletics department, and how did that go?
Unfortunately, I was not able to get an interview set up with the head coach, but I've spoken to him a few times for prior articles.
Speaking to the athletes that went to Nationals, what was this experience like for them, and how'd that go for them?
Yeah, I think like the main takeaway from speaking to all of them, like, and even throughout the season, that the team chemistry for the wrestling team is one of their high points. So like the fact that they were able to go with five of them, and like Ryan Gawker, one of the people I interviewed, it was his first time going, and he even mentioned how like that it was his first time, and a few of them had been there before, and it was like going with his best friends, and they were able to give him a ton of insight on what to expect and like what the experience is going to be like.
Yeah, so to kind of summarize, so you mentioned one of the wrestlers got seventh place all around, and then I guess like overall, what were the, like, any other results, like big takeaways from the championships, and like what else was covered in the article about the team?
Yeah, unfortunately, it was not the performance that the team itself was looking for. Ryan Gawker went 0-2. Jackson Gray, it was his first time going as well. I believe he went 0-2. Matthew Byer, he went 1-2. And Wenchard Pierre Lewis also went 0-2. So Torres was the only one to make it to the second day of matches. But the guys really rallied around Torres. They were all super proud of him. And I think it was definitely a good representation of the program having him on the podium.
Could you elaborate on like how the season as a whole kind of led up to this moment?
Yeah, so they had three returners from Nationals last season, Pierre Lewis, Torres, and Byer. And then they lost. They had four go last year, and one of them graduated. So they had a pretty young team this year, a big freshman class. And the season got off to a bit of a shaky start. They only got fourth place at their first tournament. But I know Byer mentioned it when I spoke to him. Like, everybody really picked it up throughout the season. Like, Gawker started off really slow, and he finished the season really strong. I know Pierre Lewis, I think, dealt with some injuries throughout the season. And they took second at the SUNYACs. They won the New York State Invitational Tournament, and they took second in the region. So leading up to Nationals, it was a very successful season for them. And I know when I spoke to Coach Nichols for the preview, he had mentioned how Jackson Gray had just missed making Nationals a couple times, so he was a name to look out for. So I know it definitely was a boost to the guys getting him over the hump this year, and he got to go to the tournament.
Yeah, that sounds great. And you mentioned earlier that you've spoken to the head coach of the wrestling team in the past, so could you speak on, like, what were the other times that you were covering the wrestling team?
Yeah, so I've written four stories about the team this year. I did the team preview back in November. I wrote a story about the coaching staff. They have a very large coaching staff. I believe it was seven, and they're all alumni of the program, which is pretty cool, including the head coach. And then I did a story regarding the rivalry against SUNY Cortland. And then I did this past story. So I was able to speak to Coach Nichols for the first three, fortunately. He definitely runs a very tight ship. He cares about winning, team winning. And I know the goal for him is to get onto the podium for Nationals. And I think all of the guys really brought into that. Like, I know Torres mentioned that over the summer they're going to get in team workouts, which is something they haven't done during his time on the team. Because they had a few guys just miss Nationals, plus they got four guys returning next season. So I know the goal is to get more guys on the podium so they could place as a team rather than just individuals.
Cool, that sounds great. And four articles about the wrestling team is, I mean, that's like pretty consistent. I'm curious, like, has anything in particular drawn you to wanting to cover the wrestling team, or is it any particular reason that you cover them often?
Yeah, so the first article to preview was my first article I wrote for the Ithacan, and I know my editor said that previews are like a good way to break in, and so that was like the only one that was left, so I took that. And I enjoyed speaking to the coach and the athletes, and it seemed like a good group of guys, so when the opportunity came up to take the coaching one, I jumped at that. And then the one about Cortland was right after winter break, so we needed someone to take it, and I already built a relationship with the coach and some of the athletes on the team, so they gave it to me. And then I thought it would be cool to cover the national story since I've kind of been following your season pretty closely. So I thought that'd be a good way to end it.
Yeah, absolutely. Last fall, I covered the volleyball team a lot. And so that was really exciting. Like, I would cover their game stories. So then whenever they had like a feature article about the team, I was like really excited to be able to pick that up. And yeah, I think like being able to like consistently report on a team is a lot of fun because you're kind of able to get like a closer look, like not just like maybe watching all their matches or all their games, but like kind of being like, it's like you're like the guy on the inside, like you know more than like maybe the average audience member. And I think it's pretty cool, pretty fun to be able to cover like a sport or a team consistently.
Yeah, for sure. I know like when I saw that Gray had made nationals, like I had never spoken to him up until this last article. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool, because I know he had just missed it a few times and Coach Nichols had mentioned him as a guy to look out for. So I was definitely excited to see that.
Yeah, definitely. Were there any like particular challenges that came up in your reporting for this article?
I mean, it was definitely tough getting into contact with them because the story was pitched before the meet, like a week before, right? It was after regionals. So I sent out emails to guys. I got a couple responses, but it was tough because I didn't want to follow up too close to the meet, because I know, like, as an athlete myself, like I might not want to kind of get bothered when they're trying to like lock in for the meet. And then after the meet ended, it was a pretty tight turnaround because we wanted to get the article out as soon as possible. So it was definitely tough scrambling to getting responses from everybody just to get the article out as fast as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And right after spring break, I feel like it's just like a really busy time of year for everybody.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's great that you're able to, you know, it all came together. That's great to hear. I guess to kind of wrap it up, do you have any like big takeaways? You've been following the team for a lot of their season.
Yeah, I definitely think this is a team to look out for over the next few years here at Ithaca. They have like a really good team culture. They really focus on team chemistry, but they know when it's time to work hard as well. Practices are very important and training is very important to them. They, at least all of the guys I've spoken to, they take every part of it very seriously, from diet to training to even the mental aspect was touched upon a good amount in the article. And I know the fact that they have another big recruiting class coming in for next season, plus the big freshman class they had this season, and they're returning two sophomores who just went to nationals, and they had another sophomore podium at regionals. So I think this is definitely a team to look out for.
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to like anticipate and like see where a team can go from here is always really exciting, especially since like you have a few more years at Ithaca. Like you'll be able to like see like on campus how they do in the next couple of years. You mentioned that a lot of the athletes you spoke to talked about like mental health on the team. Could you speak more on like what specifically about like mental health that they talked about?
Yeah, I think especially for this article, everybody touched upon it in some way. I know Torres and Gray mentioned it very specifically. Gray actually spoke to a sports psychiatrist this season. He said in the past he'd kind of, especially in the bigger matches, there was a quote he said like he was trying not to lose rather than trying to win. So just like speaking with someone, trying to like get into the right headspace, he said that definitely helped him in big matches. And then Torres mentioned how, especially since he went to nationals last year, he was able to envision a lot better like the big matches and the bright lights of the national stage. And he said just being able to like meditate and stay in the moment is something that really helped him. And then Gray and Gawker, it was their first time going to the national championships, and they both admitted that they were a little bit overwhelmed and they didn't do a great job like necessarily staying in the moment. And you know, that's definitely something they're going to have to work on next year. I think it's the mental aspect of the sport is clearly a lot in wrestling, because there's a lot of things you have to focus on, because a lot of guys have to cut weight and it's a very technical sport. And I think it's good to see that all of the guys on the team are very aware of it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all the questions I had for you today. Thanks so much for joining us. Is there anything else you want to share before we go?
No, I think we covered everything. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much. To our listeners, you can check out this article at theithacan.org. I'm here now with one of our reporters for the Life and Culture section, Sarah Mooney, and she's going to talk to us today about the Women's Leadership Series. So, Sarah, welcome back to On the Same Page. And please, feel free to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about this article.
Yeah, so this article originally started kind of with the intent of publishing it right as the Women's Leader Series came out to kind of promote the events that were going to be taking place. Unfortunately, that did not come out in time, but it kind of just highlights all of the amazing sessions that the series has lined up and just kind of like the different variety that they have to offer.
Great. And so starting off, to kind of get a bigger idea of the Women's Leadership Series, who did you speak to learn more about this? And did you do any research on what this event is? What was your process gaining information?
Yeah, so the first person that I talked to was Mish Lenhart, and she's on the planning board for the series, and I definitely got a lot of information from her. And the series has been around for 12 years, and it originally started as they hosted an event where they would take a group of women up to Seneca Falls for a conference, and they kind of noticed that a lot of times, like, people really weren't having, like, didn't have the time to just, like, leave for a weekend. And so they wanted to start sessions that would last, like, an hour, maybe half an hour, that people, like, could actually attend. And so that's kind of how the series got started out. And so then I wanted to look into some of the women who were leading this different series. So I talked to Elise Nepa, who hosted the kickoff event, which was a laughing yoga session, which was really interesting because I've never heard of laughing yoga. So it was really interesting to find out about that. And then I also talked to a student on the Women Leadership Series planning board, and she was actually going to host a session on identifying yourself as a, like, branding yourself as a woman. And I thought that was really interesting. All of the sessions, just, I was so fascinated by.
Yeah, that sounds great. It seems like Mish, who, I mean, I've met and I have worked with in the past, and I think she's fantastic, but it sounds like there's a lot of women putting hands on this event series. There's, like, a lot of very personal connection with this programming. So I'm curious, were you able to attend any of the sessions, and how did that go for you?
Even though I was so fascinated by all of them, unfortunately, I could not attend any of the sessions. I have been dealing with this lingering cold for a very long time, and I have been trying to get over it, and I chose sleep instead of attending these sessions.
That's so fair. I think that, you know, we gotta look out for our health and well-being before we commit ourselves to special events or anything. Are there any events, you mentioned that it's still ongoing? Okay, great. So are there any events that are coming up that you maybe are looking forward to attending?
Yeah. Okay. So there's one session that I plan on attending. It's called The Unreliable Narrator. And I just, and then also the IDing and building your personal brand as a woman is also upcoming. And both of those sessions sound really interesting. It sounds like I can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like a lot of really interesting events. I hope that you have a good time. Going back to your process for writing the article, you mentioned earlier that you spoke to a student on the planning committee for this event series. So I'm curious, what did you learn about the involvement that students have in this event series, like how they are contributing to it and organizing it?
Oh, yeah. So I also learned this from talking to Mish, but I think there are... Yeah, so there's three students involved, and basically they start planning in the fall, which I don't know, that just seems like a long timeline, and I was really interested because I don't know, it's definitely not something just like thrown together. And so they start planning it in the fall and send out calls to people just to see who is interested in presenting, which I also think is really cool. So then, like, you're getting a variety of professors, of IC faculty, of whoever, who, like, have something to say about women living well. Yeah, but, like, they also have to work around spring break. But, yeah, and they just work together to schedule when all these speakers are going to be able to present.
Cool. That sounds like it's a really big project for these students to work on, and a great opportunity for them to get more involved on campus. I'm curious. I'm a little bit in the know because I have people on the inside, because I'm also on the inside on the editorial board. But you've been working on this story for like a while, right?
Yes, I have. I started, I would say, like beginning of February, and I wanted to get like as many sources as possible and talk to the people presenting, and two, just scheduling conflicts are always so fun.
Happy to see it finally getting onto the paper. That's always so exciting to be able to see it. And so I guess to just wrap up, could you speak on why you wanted to pick up this story when it was pitched to you in the Life and Culture meeting a few weeks ago? And also any like concluding thoughts, I guess, you have to give to our listeners before we part ways?
Yeah, I really enjoy going to like events or like learning about events that I like otherwise wouldn't have known about. Like, for example, like I did the Life and Culture Front for a lot of winter holidays happenings around the Ithaca area. And I mean, I otherwise would not have attended them. And it was really fun to see like what was going on. And there was this like factory art market I had no idea about. It's right across from campus, and I loved it so much. And so when the story was pitched to me, I didn't realize IC offered like this leadership series. And so I was like, when I heard it, I was like, yes, I want to look more into that and see what this is all about. And I also just like to write about things to help like get the word out. So if you're like me and like don't really know what's everything that's going on, like you can read and find out about it.
Great. Thank you so much again for joining us today on the Same Page. And to our listeners, you can check out Sarah's article on our website at theithacan.org. Thanks for listening to On the Same Page. You can find all the articles mentioned in this episode online at theithacan.org. You can also find more episodes of On the Same Page and our other podcasts anywhere that you listen to podcasts when you search The Ithacan.